A new year. It's a time to say goodbye, and it's also a time to say hello. Before we turn the page on 2021 and move to 2022, we want to take this opportunity to really reflect on some of our dynamic guests, as well as some of the conversations we've had around the importance of establishing and living out core values as an organization, as you and all of us work to win through culture. We hope you find this episode impactful and relevant, and look forward to seeing you in the new year.
I go way back in the time machine many years ago, 17 years ago, when I came to Charlotte. One of the things that I felt was really important for the organization that did, quite frankly, have a strong value system at that time was to be a little bit more declarative in those values and to speak to them, define what we stood for as an organization as we were building our culture. So we had a set of core values. I would say for a number of years, those values stayed the same. They, in different moments in time, may have showed up better or stronger than at other moments in time. And so you and I got the good pleasure of meeting about 4.5 years ago now, when you were part of an organization that our organization was coming together to merge with. And we were, at the time, under non-disclosure agreements as a part of the work that was being done behind the scenes and getting to know one another. And I certainly knew from the perspective of what I had not only heard of you, but who I had come to know you to be, that you were very good at helping the organization you were a part of really stand for something important. And you made that a reality every day. So I was excited when you decided to join our team. It was a quick and easy decision to ask you to do that. I was excited that you said yes.
That was quick and easy too.
Well, that's good to hear. That's good to hear. I never asked you that, but you're still here. So I guess that's a good sign. And, you know, one of the things that you and I talked about, because as you're bringing two organizations together, you have people that have done certain things and, you know, the organization gets larger, gets more complex, you know, emerging cultures. And we had already been through about a year prior to that, bringing another organization, merging with them and having to assimilate some differences of culture. But you and I talked about how are we going to really make that the bedrock of how we help everybody manage the change, go through the change, and become one organization. I would say the focus wasn't even really totally on culture at that point. It was just more on what do we stand for, who are we, and how can we get everybody with your strong focus in communications and change management. How do we get everybody kind of moving in the same direction? So we brought in an outside facilitator. We had a day, long session with a lot of whiteboards. And it was neat for me because of the fact that not only were you there, but we had some other folks that joined us. And you and I are two different generations. So I am of the older generation, Gen X. And you, I guess, technically are in the millennial generation.
Technically.
Yes, but by your calendar birth, but and your wisdom is beyond that. But what I found interesting that day is how passionate so many of the, and I will say younger people in the room were about this topic. And it was very clear to me that there were values that were passionate to the people in the room as we went through this facilitated process that were different than the core values we had. And the agreement we made was everything was up on the table for what did we stand for going forward.
So with that, let's jump right in. So at the firm, growth is defined as living outside of our comfort zone. We really believe that to really excel in a growth capacity, we are forced to have a growth mindset. And that means that we never quit on getting better as individuals, as leaders, and ultimately as an organization. We definitely push each other, and I know you push me, to be the best versions of ourselves each day. And I'd love to get your thoughts on how that resonates with you and really what you define growth as.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, I can definitely agree. The only way that we truly live in all aspects of our life is to really just live outside of our comfort zone. So whether that's taking over a new responsibility at work, kind of hitting that rock, as we say, with EOS now, kind of getting those goals in line, or maybe it's a personal milestone. That's been a really big one for me this past year. there's plenty of things that we can really push ourselves towards and make something for ourselves. I think that's kind of the most important part about growth. You want to push yourself to where you want to be eventually. And you've got to focus on all the little things that come along with that to kind of help you get there. So there's a ton of stuff that goes with growth, like I just said, but it's all about looking at it as an accomplishment for yourself and taking a moment to kind of celebrate that. So I think for me, the biggest thing that's really inspired me to be continuing to be mindful of keeping that growth mindset is really working towards new goals that I set for myself day in and day out.
It is apparent that you continuously invest in others. How do you view stewardship in your daily life?
Wow, that's a great question. And I think most important is I do better at it some days than I do others. But I think generally is just trying to take that mindset of putting others first. And what that has in reciprocity, what that gives back to you is infinitely more than you actually give out to others. And that's in business, in our communities, in our homes, is just taking that mindset of how can I serve today using those things that I've been entrusted with.
A lot of the time when we talk about stewardship in the organization, we say giving back through our time, our talent, and our treasure. And that's really impacting the greater good, not only for those that are internally in the organization, but ultimately the communities and the greater world that we serve. How do you see that playing out on a daily basis in the organization?
Yeah, well, I think the important part is it's all three, right? And often when you think about stewardship or giving, most of that is in terms of money, which is absolutely helpful and needed and necessary. And there's a lot of great things that you can do with that. But the impact of time and talent is often underemphasized and underutilized. And what we've tried to consciously do is just weave that into the fabric of our culture in the organization. And that comes in just checking in with people at a personal level, letting them know that you care, and seeing what that can do in someone's life is just amazing. And we're all here for greater purposes than the businesses that we're in and serving something. So you get to see that play itself out in the organization. And then secondly, just in our culture of the firm, just it creates even a collaboration where everyone is helping everyone else try and achieve that next step in life and in success, and then gives you that platform to hold each other accountable to say, are you paying attention to those things in life that truly matter to you at that point, whatever that may be?
Well, and you mentioned something interesting when you said about, you know, it's really all three. And as part of the organization, we have developed, I would consider what I call a stewardship arm in hands and feet. And that is really for us to use all three of those components to impact those that are around us. And over the last 3 years, we've given away from the monetary component, from a charitable giving standpoint, over $100,000. And that's just one piece of the greater pie when it comes to giving back and being a good steward, right? So when we think about organizations that we've impacted, not only from that monetary perspective, but also a giving from a time and resources standpoint, ISF is one of them. So Isabella Santos Foundation, Thompson Child and Family Focus, Taylor's Tale, the list goes on. When you think about hands and feet and your involvement there, because you were a board member at one point and you've rolled off now and you still continuously give insight and support and you volunteer along with us. I know this past year looked a little different from being able to go and actually serve in a greater capacity, given just the environment that we're in. I know we're going to get back to that soon, but what has hands and feet really meant to you? And how do you see that as part of the culture of the organization?
Oh, wow.
There's just a couple of questions in there for you.
Well, hands and feet, I believe, started over a decade now ago. And it really started with an idea of we're doing really great work in our chosen line of profession, helping people with their finances, secure their financial future, and plan for the unexpected and everything in between. And it just felt like that one piece was missing in terms of how are we going out in the community versus people coming into us. And that's really the genesis of that idea of seeking ways to be able to not only do that, but to invite people as a part of our organization to participate along with us and experience that we started talking about before, just that impact that giving of all of those things can do, not only for the particular organization that you're trying to support, but what it gives back to you in terms of your relationships, that just feeling of doing something to make a difference. And it's been tremendous to be able to watch and grow. And to your point, that can range from just being able to take some of the resources of dollars and give them to organizations that they can put those to way better use than you or I could, just based off of their expertise and what they do and their hearts and what they're working towards. All the way down to, I mean, Rise Against Hunger is another one of our favorites, where we get to take our competitive spirits and go and pack meals that are going to be shipped, who knows where often, we don't know. And you've got people from, you know, 8 to 80 that are in the room working together and having that experience. And it's not a price tag that you could put on that.
Oh, I completely agree. So let's hop right in. Audrey, I have to start with you. In crafting the core values of our organization, we had a collaborative meeting where we kind of threw everything on the table. And authenticity was one that really stuck out to you. And you were very vocal about the importance of having it as part of our 5 core values as an organization. Can you share with me a little bit about why that one is so important to you?
Yeah, I mean, in just thinking about being authentic, one of the things that Tim, our president, always says when he talks to me is he always knows where he stands, right? And I think that's so important to have that clear dialogue, and it helps you continue to move forward in whatever your goals are. And so I think in this day and age, everything's so filtered and kind of blended down a little bit that we aren't able to really truly let people know what's going well, what's not going well, what our gifts and talents are. And I think ultimately, by having authenticity, our advisors know we're always going to be able to tell them the things that we need to tell them for them to be successful. If there are things that are not going well, we'll let them know and let them know our corrective actions. It's not this smoke and mirrors of us trying to pretend that there's perfection, because the truth of the matter is, in the authentic imperfection of life, you learn a lot and you grow a lot. And that's why that's so important to me.
Absolutely. I know we've all leaned into a lot of, I would say, difficult conversations over the years, working together, both with each other and with the greater organization and advisors that we support. Amy, as you think about leaning into those conversations, I know you've pushed me and really have helped us be more authentic with each other in our conversations. As far as how we think about the importance of being authentic in every situation, what really resonates from authenticity with you?
I just, you know, to kind of mirror what Audrey said, I do like to know where I stand with people. I don't like vagaries. And it just kind of helps that growth, right? If someone doesn't tell me something over and over and just lets it build up, and all of a sudden I had no idea I was doing something wrong for 6 months, a year, and then I get a plethora of things that I've done wrong. Well, that's just not fair to me, is it, right? It's not fair to do to anyone else. If you kind of just watch someone sink because you were too scared to have an authentic conversation, well, then that failure's on you, not on the person that ultimately is being hurt by it. So that's kind of always been my motto, is just kind of like, you know, rip that Band-Aid off and have it up front. And then they're willing to tell you things too, right? So it's a two-way street. If I'm willing to open up and kind of have that tough conversation, that person's going to be able to have that tough conversation back with me. And ultimately, that's where I'm going to grow as well. So that's kind of how I've always viewed my life. And so I've had a lot of tough conversations thrown back at me as well. So I've grown a lot, let's say that.
Yeah. In a previous podcast, I know Tim mentions that we learn more from the mistakes or the failures that we have versus necessarily all the success that we have. I mean, it kind of goes hand in hand. You have to have those moments, and you definitely will learn more about yourself and how you interact with others through those. I know you're strongly convicted in your why, given that it was is definitely such a change coming from transportation sales into financial services, just from a sector and, you know, business line standpoint. But you have so much compassion for what you do. And I've been able to experience that in the relationship that you and I have built. And also hearing your stories of how you've been working with other advisors to meet the client's needs. And I think that it would be good just to kind of like, how do you put that into words? Like when you think about your why, I mean, you talked a lot about the fact you were restless coming into it, wanted to find where you could really take that next step. When you speak with individuals, how would you put your why into words?
Yeah. So, oh, wow. Lots of different thoughts there. I wouldn't say it's necessarily just like one specific thing, but it's everything for me between kind of feeling like I wasn't necessarily in the role I was in previously. I didn't feel like I was making an impact or I was doing something of significance. And so I felt when I really kind of stripped everything down, that's what I felt like I was missing. And I saw my dad in this really at an arm's length. I mean, growing up, I don't think you can really understand or appreciate the work that frankly, either of your parents do probably.
Very true. Yeah. Kind of like, I understand that you have a job and that you provide for our family, but beyond that, right. Yeah.
But I saw my dad as having some great relationships, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that I saw myself in the role that I was in previously, it felt like the industry was becoming more and more commoditized.
Mm-hmm.
And that was not a direction I cared for. And I'm a relationship-driven person.
Absolutely. I can vouch for that.
And so it just didn't feel like long-term, that was going to be really a great home for me.
So you're strongly convicted in your why. How do you articulate that and put all the compassion that I've been able to witness into words?
Yeah, so certainly, and I've shared a lot about my background and how I got into the business. So first and foremost, the why, I was definitely missing something in my previous role. And so really just missing and felt like I wasn't making an impact or I wasn't doing something of significance. And so I think that that kind of led me down this path. But I also don't know that I would have felt as comfortable taking this jump in my mid-30s, you know, with a husband and two kids and family in tow, if I hadn't been on the other side of an advisor relationship and kind of had the confidence in some of the work and the protection that we had put in place. I didn't have that, I don't know if you want to call it safety net, if you will, or kind of just that feeling of security that I have that ability to do this at this point in my life.
Yeah, the planning you had put in place allowed you the freedom to make a change that you didn't necessarily know where you would end up, but you felt comfortable knowing that you had that safety net because you had put in place some protection against the what happens, the what ifs in life.
Yeah, no, I think you just summed it up perfectly, and that's exactly right.
We were discussing the whole idea of balance. It's a word that gets tossed around a lot. I think it's somewhat misunderstood when it comes to the context of balance in life. Yeah, I am curious, Ryan, what does the word balance mean to you? Let's start there.
It's kind of funny when I got the heads up that we would be talking about the word balance. It's such a large thought and permeating word throughout life and everything that I remember going to sleep that night and my brain couldn't shut off because I couldn't stop thinking about how much balance applies to just about everything. Balance is just one of those things that we seek in our relationships, in our business, in our health, in just about every aspect of our life and in life altogether. So it's such a big thing. You could write a book about it, but I think the book would be too big.
Well, as you think about it from the perspective of a business owner, as you are a financial planner, I mean, how has balance played a role in the success of your business?
Once again, I think that there are several ways that balance has played a role. I can tell you that I've gone through many periods of not being in balance. I remember, Tim, you mentioned this when I heard you say this when I first started, that being a financial planner is a career where you're underpaid for 7 years and then...
I think it was five.
Something like that, for the first 5 years.
Different tale.
Overpaid every year after, something like that. I remember telling somebody that. I was like, wait a minute, I'm in my 14th year. I don't feel like... But anyway. Yeah, like, wait, I should stop saying that. So there's a long period of time where you're building your business and you're focusing on things. And personally, for me, I got very out of balance in how I approached my work. And that affected so many different parts of my life. And I guess I was just out of balance altogether as far as health and relationships and business and things like that. And I could feel it. And then, Yeah, as you know, I went through somewhat of a traumatic experience where I was suddenly a single father overnight, and I had no choice but to say, okay, reset. And yeah, and it was, all right, what's important? And what do I need to focus on in order to reset and get this train on the right track? And the number one thing was my son, and putting him as the top priority and making sure that I focused on being there for him and making sure that he had a happy life and was raised with good relationships. And then I realized that I needed to get healthy myself, which I had neglected for several years. I was never what I would call obese, but I was not healthy. And I had many reasons in my head as to why that was. But then I realized that they were all just excuses. And so I started focusing on that and finding ways to exercise and limiting, because of the fact that I needed to focus on those, I needed to cut back on the time that I was over applying to business. So I decided that, okay, every day I'm going to leave the office. I'm going to be done at 4 o'clock. And I'm going to go and I'm going to go for a run. And I'm going to pick up my son. And it was really funny because when I had an open-ended timeline for the day, I would work until 6, 6:30 and still not feel like I got anything done. But then when I put that time limit on it, I knew that I had to leave at that time. And suddenly I got so much more done in several hours less. And suddenly I was getting exercise and losing weight. And when you do that, you eat healthier because you know how hard you're working on the other days. And then I was having more time with my son and I was healthier and able to be more active with him. And it had this kind of domino effect of healthiness and getting that balance going. And then also, you know, another part of it was, as we talked about, the spirituality part of it and focusing on, okay, getting my mind, refocusing on my spirit and getting that into in line or in balance. And it was a, you know, somewhat of a renaissance in my own life that took place when all that happened. And so, you know, finding that balance there between all those different areas of life was a huge achievement for me that I had never had. And, you know, going back to the original question, which I seem to have wandered off from, how has that played into my business? When I shortened those hours, I became more productive. When I started to say no to things and prioritize and focus on only on what was important, what needed to get done, and what was going to be best for my business in those hours, my business almost exploded. And it was quite an amazing thing to witness from my perspective, how it happened. And it was almost, you could see it to the day when it suddenly switched.
Yeah.
It was shortly after that that I was given the book Essentialism, which kind of focuses on that same concept.
So there's a couple of things I can point to pretty specifically. One is we actually made a conscious effort to have people commit to a pledge to honor this vision. And we've created like a little 2.5 by 3 inch kind of credo card that is a part of everybody's uniform. It is a team promise. It is a vision for the organization. It is the values by which we stand: quality, service, community, and teamwork. And it is a credo card that we want everybody to abide by. And we actually made everyone sign a document saying they would honor this. And while I know that is somewhat figurative, it actually is a, you're committing to it. You're signing a contract that you will honor this. And so I think the nature of that in and of itself became something that we could share with your organization. So now 3 or so years later, every time we onboard someone, they sign the similar document that I did 3 years ago. I think that's one thing that has become a little bit more than just a symbol. It's actually become a meaningful sort of exercise. I think the second thing we did is, and this is maybe a bit of the marketer in me, but we really, until a couple of years ago, didn't do a great job of internal communication. So going back to what I was saying before, when you grow as rapidly as we have, one of the things that I think we perhaps had more opportunity to be successful at was feeling like you're part of one big place. How do I feel like I'm part of Ortho Carolina versus I just work at the doctor's office near where I live in the town where my location is? And we had to figure out a way to bring people together. And it proved difficult. You can't always drive out there. Keep in mind, we're a business that we see people and patients during the day. So the way to communicate with everyone else is after hours. Well, that's not always easy with offices in Winston-Salem and Shelby and Concord and Rock Hill and even further places like Laurinburg and out near Pinehurst and Scotland County. So we needed to figure out a way to have a more robust internal communications strategy, not just a technology by which we could put videos and things on. So we really leaned hard into creating an internal communications department, which we did not have until a couple of years ago. And the thought there would be, if we have better communication across the organization, we by default will uplift our culture. We can highlight the great things that our staff and people are doing. We can showcase the growth that we're experiencing as an organization. We can challenge one another to be better. We can share best bets. We can talk about things we're doing in the community. We can introduce new staff members. We can introduce new physicians. And it can be done in a platform that everybody will access, that everybody has access to, and they can do it on their own time and at their own convenience. And so I try hard to not underplay the role that successful communication strategy has and can have in an organization. It sometimes is an afterthought. We need a super strong culture. We need everybody to abide by a credo card that they wear on their person day in and day out. But if you don't have a way to communicate and show that you're actually living those values, living those things, then is it really happening? And so we hired an internal communications specialist. We made it part of our culture team and our communications team, and we've been off and running ever since.
David, you've talked about some specific situations. I'm curious, given the Winning Through Culture title of this podcast, I mean, how have you seen cultures in businesses positively impacted by someone being willing to take the risk and do the work to bring their authentic self and elements of their faith into business?
Well, again, as I mentioned, I think it's what it does is it builds community. It builds the idea that you're part of something bigger than yourself. And, you know, I can speak from my own experience having, you know, been in organizations where that wasn't the case, where you were literally showing up for a paycheck, looking over your shoulder to who was coming up behind you to stab you in the back type of deal. And I think when you're able to do this well, you're building a community that really does care for each other. You're building a vision that goes beyond yourself. And there's a certain trust element there that is so important to that. And again, the byproduct at the end of the day, the byproduct is actual better performance. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, we are in business to make money. That is not a non-biblical or
non-biblical.
Right. And if people are willing to try this, I think they'll see better performance.
So neither one of us are an attorney. And I know this is a topic that comes up, but recognizing neither one of us are attorneys, so we're not going to give any legal counsel here, but what are some of the legal considerations you've heard people express concern about as it relates to integration of faith in the workplace?
Yes, I'm not an attorney, for sure. Again, I haven't encountered much resistance as it related to legal type of things. And I think there's a couple of reasons for that. As I said, I don't lead with religion. I don't lead with my faith. I incorporate that as part of my everyday activity. I know I'm going to interact with 10 to 20 people a day in some fashion. And my job is to show up as my most authentic self and to be the best image of God I can be. And if you do that, maybe the conversation will turn to God, maybe it won't. But at least I can honestly say that I've done my best to represent our firm with our employees and with our clients the best possible. The other thing I think is important is to seek out those you know don't believe the same way that you do. You know, when I joined this firm, I knew there were those who did not have the same belief system that I did. And I made it a point to befriend myself with those people and start to develop a relationship with them. So I think that's an important piece. And the other thing too is at the end of the day, there's a lot of commonality of belief systems. If you emphasize the commonality of those belief systems, you can, I think, thread the needle in terms of being your authentic self, emphasizing the commonality.
As you've built your business, how has culture played a role in the evolution of your practice and your team?
So that has come, and I've had the benefit of having two practices. One in South Florida that I sold before I moved to North Carolina, and then the practice that I developed with MassMutual Carolinas when we got here in 2005 with you. So I guess I'd like to focus for the moment on that culture experience. Not that I had a negative experience prior to that, but it's been a long time that we've been working on culture together. And so, frankly, I've, to an extent, leaned on the culture of MassMutual Carolinas because that has allowed me, you know, sometimes it's, I'm not the greatest author in the world. So although I, in my heart, I know how culture runs within my firm, I may not be the best person at writing it or expressing it or having that written mission statement that fits. And frankly, part of the reason that I joined MassMutual Carolinas in the first place had to do with what I understood as a quality culture. And that culture breeds through everything that we do. It is expressed to various, all the advisors in our firm. There are certain things that we would expect, again, wanting to be treated as we would treat others, to our clients, to other professionals within our firm. So what has happened is through that culture, I've been able to hold my head high, know that wherever I go, whatever I'm doing, I'm not just been taught and expressing a certain level of culture, but also am backed by that culture appropriately. And what I mean by that is there's been numerous times over the years that our culture has been tested locally and globally and in Charlotte. And in just about every case that I can think of, culture has won. Culture has stood out. The people that I surround myself with have said, we're going to make sure we do the right thing, even if it's due to our own personal cost or pain. That's allowed me to also implement that level of culture through my firm and through the people that I work with. And I can honestly look at them and say, I do this, the people around us do this, and this is just how we run our business. We always try and do the right thing, put the client first. And that's how you run a business. That's how you sustain yourself in this industry for a long time. That's how the people in compliance respect you and make sure that you're not on their list of problem concerns. So again, it all works out by just trying to do the right thing. And again, I want to thank the MassMutual Carolinas and the culture level they've put forth because it's helped me maintain a clear focus on what that culture is and bring it through locally also.